Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Mark Burry, the content marketing expert, providing you with 5 new episodes each week on how you can grow your business and achieve your breakthrough. One of the best forms of investment is real estate. And this is something that has been touted by a lot of people who have literally been able to make millions of dollars from real estate, as it's a very, if you're able to figure it out, it's one of these like more stable types of investments where like you can mathematically figure out that I'm able to make money through real estate. But some people struggle with having the money to make a big investment or raising money, which is the route some people go. And this episode is going to focus on how we can raise money for real estate on the path to becoming a millionaire. Today's guest is the author of Magnetic Capital, a book that teaches people how they can raise the money they need for any worthy venture. He also turns ordinary people into millionaires through real estate. And as a real estate developer, he's building multi-million dollar apartment buildings. Today's guest for episode 150 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Victor Menashe. Victor, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Great to be here.
Victor, I'm really looking forward to diving into real estate and how we can raise the money to make these investments happen. But I'd love to get some background first. So what first attracted you to the real estate scene?
Well, my path into real estate was not exactly a traditional career path. I spent most of my career, in fact, as an electrical engineer, as a microprocessor designer. That's where I got my start. And so the path from there to real estate development was definitely not the traditional path. In fact, I was about my 20th trip to Tokyo in a year and a half. We were building a new cellular network there, and it was burning me out physically, emotionally. I mean, 13-hour time zone change every few days was just brutal on the body. And I simply decided to take a left turn in my career and do something different. And what kept coming up over and over again was the world of real estate investing. You know, the days of building wealth in technology, it's like saying, you know, you want to win the lottery when you grow up. There are so many companies that were struggling to achieve breakout success. It literally was like winning the lottery. And even if you did win, the chances of you surviving as an independent entity, you know, within 5 years of not being absorbed by somebody else, so the chances of that were vanishingly small. So real estate just kept coming up over and over again as a place where you could invest, where people will lend you money to invest so you could scale, and in fact, where much of the wealth in the world has been created. So it was a conscious decision to move in that direction. And that was back in, 2009.
And with the real estate, I mean, one of the big things people will think of, and I mentioned this in the intro, is the prices for real estate. I mean, like, it's really good to get into. I feel like people think that they need to have a good amount of money to make a down payment or something like that before they get started. So for people who want to go to the route of raising money, how do you suggest that we raise money for a real estate investment?
Well, raising money for real estate is no different than raising money for anything else. You've got to have a few fundamentals. And the reason I wrote the book Magnetic Capital was I really got most of my experience in raising money in the tech industry. And what I discovered in that process is that sometimes it was easy and sometimes it was hard. And by noticing the pattern, I figured out that there was a little bit of a formula. When it was easy, there were a certain set of elements in place. And when it was hard, there were things that were missing. And it really comes down to 5 elements. And that really is the basis of the book Magnetic Capital. In fact, I didn't even set out to write the book, but I had this, piece of intellectual property. And a friend of mine heard me speaking on a radio interview and speaking about this. And he said, Victor, you've got a book there. And I said, yeah, I know, but I'm busy writing another book. And he said, no, you got to write this one. And so that night I went home and I outlined 13 chapters, and he was right. There was a book there. And so that was the genesis of Magnetic Capital. So to answer your question, the process for raising money for real estate is no different. It's exactly the same as for any venture. Even if you're looking to raise money for a charity, the process is the same. And so it really comes down to a few fundamentals. Number one, you've got to have a relationship. Most people are not going to part with millions of dollars of their hard-earned life savings with people they don't know. And it's exactly the same you know, for real estate or any other venture. That's number one. Number two, you've got to establish a layer of trust, and that there's a whole psychological contract of trust. And we'll get into this in a bit more detail. We'll go back over these five elements. Number three, you got to have a track record. If you don't have a track record, people are not going to have confidence to invest with you. Number four, you got to have a compelling opportunity. And then number five, you've got to have alignment between the goals for the money and the goals for your project. And if that fit isn't there, if you don't have that perfect fit, you're not going to raise the money. It's that simple. And if you are mindful of those five elements and you can hit on all five of those, raising money is remarkably easy. So that I wanted to, you know, lay out that framework, and then we can dive in and into more detail about each of those specific elements and what it means. And what I find typically is that a lot of real estate investors focus on, well, I've got a great deal. And they approach someone with money and they think that that money is available for that deal. It may not be the case. So, you know, it's really a matter of approaching it in a methodical way that's going to work for investors.
And those principles, I mean, I see how they are in there for all these initiatives that end up raising money. But I'd like to talk about another part of the process also. So when you do make an investment, one of the things you want to do is make sure you're making the right investment. So I'm wondering, what is the research and preparation that you put into boosting the likelihood of you making a good investment?
We have a very disciplined criteria in our business in terms of how we invest. So we're looking for a few characteristics. I mean, number one, we're looking for, we're really treating it as a business. It's not just an investment. It is a business. And so we've got to be able to have some sustainability. That means making not just one investment, but a stream of investment in the same location or within that surrounding area with the same team, because the investment is twofold. It's money, but it's also investing in building the team, because a good deal badly managed is no deal. So it always comes down to the management. That's the only differentiating factor at the end of the day. So if you're going to do good projects, you have to have a good team, and it takes time and effort to build that team. Without you have nothing. You have an idea, but you can't execute on it. So we definitely want to be in an area where we can see a sustained stream of investment, where the numbers are going to make sense over a period of time, whether that's 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. We want to be able to see that sustainability. And then if that's satisfied, then we generally don't go looking for deals, although sometimes you do find them. In my experience, the best deals are the ones that are created. And there's a vast difference between the two, because generally speaking, unless something is on sale, you know, it's out there on the MLS system, there's nothing out there with a flashing red light on it saying, I'm a deal, come get me. Most of the time, and if there is, its lifespan on the MLS is measured in hours. There's a lot of competition, and people are generally looking for things like that. In fact, even in larger multi-unit complexes, there are multiple offers in today's environment. I see, for example, we placed an offer on a 396-unit complex in Tyler, which is about an hour outside of Dallas, and there were 20 offers on that property, 20. I never want to be the winning bidder in that kind of situation. I'll be paying too much. So, you know, competing for deals is not the way, at least not the way that we want to play. We'd rather create opportunities out of nothing, out of an idea, and create value. And at that point, it's in our control. It's not in the hands of the market or someone else. We're in control.
And it's interesting how you have this criteria. And obviously, yeah, the criteria is going to be different for each person based on their location and their preferences. And one of the things you mentioned earlier when we were talking about raising money for real estate, I was interested with the one where you want to have a good track record. And the reason I want to bring this up is because some people may be thinking about doing this for the first time where they don't have a track record. So what's your advice for someone who wants to raise more money for their venture, even if they don't have that proven track record in that area?
The thing to remember is that when people invest, they invest in businesses. They generally don't invest in the self-employed. And that's a very key distinction. you're investing in a business by definition is a team sport. So they're not investing just with you. They're investing with your business. That means it's got to have some scale. It has some sustainability. Hardest thing to do is to try and do something by yourself. The hardest thing to do is to try and do something that is too small because you can't afford all of the skills that are necessary to pull off a project. So given that that's true, you know, you got to think about this as a team sport and say, all right, who can I align myself with? If I don't have the experience and I don't have the track record, who can I align myself with? And I'll go work with them for maybe a year or two so that I can actually borrow some of their track record because I've legitimately earned it. I've worked with them. And now, you know, maybe down the road, I can go off and do projects on my own. But in the meantime, I've developed a track record by borrowing some of their credibility. So, you know, if your expertise, let's say you might be, maybe your expertise is in construction. A lot of people think, all right, I'm in construction, I'm going to go flip houses. Well, my answer to that is, okay, great. So you've got 20% of what you need to pull it off. What do you want to do for the other 80%? And then, you know, often they say, well, what do you mean? I say, well, okay, so first thing you need to do is you need to find the deals. You're a construction guy. What do you know about finding deals? What do you know about analyzing the numbers? That's the second 20%. And make sure that you have a proper deal analysis done. Okay, you can do the construction. You can fix it. Perfect. How are you going to find the money? Are you an expert at raising capital? That's the other 20% you need. And then do you know how to sell property? You're not a realtor. You're a construction guy. So you got to think of this as a team sport. You know, there's distinct skill sets, whether you're doing a buy, fix, and sell transaction, whether you're doing a buy, build, and hold, or a buy, fix, and hold. Whatever it is that you're looking to do, there's different skill sets that are required, and you're going to need to be part of a team.
And, I mean, with a team, like, obviously, there are, as you mentioned, a lot of skill sets that we need to have because they're like one person's going to specialize in one area, another person's going to specialize in another area, but how do you find the right people for your team?
It's really relationship building. You've got to find people that maybe have a gap that needs to be filled. Maybe there's, you know, you can work with that team and add some value in some way. You know, for example, the projects that I do today, the builders that we hire have a very strong track record. You know, they've built thousands and thousands of units. It's not two guys in a pickup truck. You know, these are strong, established players. So what we do in those situations is, you know, they're good at building, but they may not necessarily be good at raising capital. So then they will come and tap me on the shoulder and say, well, Victor, can you help us put together this project? And, you know, and I'll pull together a team to go do that. So I'm not necessarily hands-on managing the day-to-day, although I do have an engineering background and can add an awful lot of value. My unique skill is my ability to raise money, and that's not necessarily everybody's skill. So there are things I could do, and then there are a certain set of things I should do, and I focus by only doing those things I should do. And we can hire the other could-do things, you know, to fill out the rest of the team.
So, I mean, would you go as far as, like, what are some of the areas that, like, you would say, this is something that I absolutely must do? Like, is it different for each person, or are there, like, a few core things in real estate investing that you and you only should be doing?
It really varies by person. You know, I learned how to raise money back in my technology days. I was, you know, I was involved in five different mergers and acquisitions. You know, was involved in taking one company public. So I gained experience in raising money back then. I dealt with a lot of venture capitalists, private equity firms, and things of that sort. And it was really when I moved into real estate that I discovered it was the same process. In fact, it was kind of funny because I was actually sitting at a mastermind in San Diego, and I was presenting some of my projects to the folks at the mastermind. And they pointed out to me, they said, Victor, you know, when you're presenting at the front of the room and you're talking about the project management, and you're talking about the different parts of the deal, your energy level was kind of low. But when you started talking about the process of raising the money, your energy level went up. And they pointed out to me at that time, this was several years ago, they pointed out to me, they said, Victor, your gift, the one thing that you should be focused on is raising capital. And it took someone else pointing it out to me before I realized it myself. And they said, you know, Victor, yes, you've got an engineering background and, you know, you're probably a very good project manager, but you can hire someone else to do that. You can't hire someone to raise the money. That's your unique gift and that's what you should go do. And that was a light bulb went on for me at that moment. It became very clear that that was my unique gift. Sure, there were other things I could do. And, you know, for all your listeners, they need to go through that same thought process and figure out what is their unique gift.
It's great that you're able to focus on that unique gift because there are like certain things that we're not able to do that we could just hand off to someone else to do so we could focus on that. In your case, raising money for the ventures that you pursue. And with that in mind, with this being your unique gift, I'm sure you've seen a lot of people being able to raise money very well, some not so much. So what do you believe holds most people back from raising the money they need for their ventures?
It's a few psychological barriers. Probably the number one barrier that I see is people think that if they're raising money, they're somehow asking for money and they feel uncomfortable asking for money. My response to that is, okay, great. If you're uncomfortable asking for money, then don't ask for money, because I don't ask for money. I never do. What I do instead is I offer people the opportunity to collaborate with me on a project. And that's a very different posture. It's a very different way of approaching it. Because, I mean, think about it. If you have a relationship, someone that you have a deep, meaningful relationship with, and you have a smoking opportunity, something that is an out-of-this-world opportunity, it would, in fact, be disloyal to them not to offer them the opportunity to come along for the ride with you. And when you approach it that way, you're not asking for money. You're just giving them an opportunity. And if it's not a fit, that's okay. The relationship's more important. And then the pressure, the awkwardness, the whatever you want to call it, that just vanishes. It disappears. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's probably the number one thing that I see is that people are uncomfortable. The second thing is that they're maybe uncomfortable with relationship building. So they're looking in the wrong places for money. You know, if you're trying to, you know, if you, and this gets down to alignment, which is the very last of the five principles. You've got to make sure that the goals for the money match with the goals for the project. You know, if you're trying to raise money from someone who's got $100 million in net worth and you're trying to raise $100,000, well, it's not a fit. It's not worth their time and effort to even do the paperwork. They're going to want projects that are in the $3 to $10 million range. They want to do something that's going to be a bit more substantial. So you've got to match the size of the investment to the capability of the investor. If you've got a mismatch there, it's not going to work. You've got to match them in terms of the duration, the term of the investment. How long is the money going to be tied up for? Well, if the project's going to take you three years to complete and they want the money back in 6 months, it's not going to fit. It's not going to work. If your goal is to give them a 6% rate of return and they want 15, it's not going to work. You know, you have to hit on every single one of these elements to make sure that the goals for the money match the goals for the project. Maybe the tax consequence for them isn't the right tax consequence. You need to go through that thought process in a structured way. And it's a little bit, the analogy that I use is it's a little bit like buying a pair of shoes. You know, you can go to the shoe store, you can see the most beautiful pair of shoes, and my gosh, it's your lucky day they're on sale. But if they don't fit, you're not a buyer. It doesn't matter how beautiful they are or how deeply discounted they are. If they don't fit, you're not a buyer. And if you think about investing in exactly the same way, it takes all the pressure off, because when we talk about shoes, people get it instantly. But then when we start talking about money, all of a sudden people get very awkward about it because, you know, somehow it's socially uncomfortable. Think of it like a pair of shoes. And again, all that awkwardness will disappear.
I really like that idea of just trying to blank out that awkwardness, because I can see like a lot of people asking for money or thinking of it as asking for money, and they do feel that sense of awkwardness. So it is better to think of it in the sense of collaboration. And based on our interview, I can see that you're really passionate about raising money. It's something that you're definitely very enthusiastic about. But I'm wondering if you could share with us one big challenge you faced as you were raising money and developing that skill, and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
There's different situations that make raising money difficult. Probably the hardest thing to do is to do it on a very short time scale. And when you do that, you appear desperate. And desperation is never attractive. you may not be desperate, but you appear desperate. People say, well, why do you need the money by Friday? What's wrong with this picture? And so, in fact, we're going through a project right now where the deadline for completing the project was determined by a prior set of contracts. And so it was being put together on a short time scale. And that's one of the hardest things to do. Now, in that particular instance, we're probably not going to move forward with that capital raise. We're probably going to restructure it and do it in a more measured manner so that we're not going to do it in a hurry. That's probably the most difficult. The other thing that's sometimes difficult is again, if you're trying to do something that's a forced fit, you might be dealing with a funding partner and it looks like it almost works. You might meet 10 out of their 11 criteria, and that can be very seductive because it looks like it almost works. Well, something that almost works actually doesn't. And it's a matter of coming to that realization that you're actually wasting your time and you're wasting their time, and you better to acknowledge that and move on and find someone for whom it is going to be a fit rather than take more time. Now, of course, by the time you figured out that it almost works, you probably invested a fair amount of time. So you've got both time invested, you probably got an emotional investment in the process, and now you're thinking, well, I have to get it done with this party, otherwise I reset the process and I have to start again with someone else. And sometimes that's life, sometimes that happens. So, the most difficult situations, like I said, are when you're trying to do it on a short time scale. Probably the most difficult one that I did, it was actually a failure. Which I managed to turn around into a different deal structure. Back in 2004, I was looking to raise about $250 million to acquire a division out of IBM. It was actually their embedded microprocessor division. And at that particular point in time, the executive within IBM was looking for an asset sale by the end of the quarter in order to compensate for a loss somewhere else in the business. That way he didn't have to report to Wall Street a surprise. And so that's what this asset sale was all about. We were going to buy this particular division out of IBM. So there was a hard deadline. And, trying to raise $250 million in 90 days is challenging. I don't care who you are. That's challenging. And we had a money partner who came in and said, yes, we'll underwrite the deal. And about 3 days before closing, in the due diligence process, there was a bit of a surprise. The revenue forecast for one of the products got pushed out by 6 months, and that spooked our banker, who said, we're going to need a few more days. We're not going to get this done in the quarter, but we need to complete our due diligence. And at that point, IBM came back and said, well, we really need this done by the end of the quarter. If you're not going to close it with us by the end of the quarter, we have to bring in some other parties and turn this into more of an auction, and of course the price will go up, and that's what they did. And so we ended up losing the deal to a California company who paid almost $100 million more than us. So we lost the deal completely. And after that, what happened is I called the CEO of the company that acquired the business from IBM, and I said, I introduced myself and said, you just bought this thing out from under us. You probably need some help. You don't know anything about this business. You probably need some help. So in the end, to make a long story short, he ended up acquiring my company and our executive team as the executive team to run that newly acquired business. So we ended up running the business, albeit in a different ownership structure. But, that was as an example where we literally spent, probably 6 months working on this acquisition, and we literally at the stroke of midnight.
That's a really great story for people who they may feel like they like when one door closes, you don't know how another one can open. And this story is a really great example of how something didn't go the way that was hoped, but then a new opportunity came knocking in. It was all because Victor took that initiative to make that call and start that relationship, which is one of those five principles for being able to raise money. And for anyone who wants to get Victor's book, Magnetic Capital, that will be in the show notes, markaberti.com/E150. But I'm wondering, Victor, if you could share with us three other books that you feel would have a positive impact on us.
From the perspective of raising capital? And or for real estate or both?
Both.
Okay. So I would say there's a book called Pitch Anything by Oren Klaff. And that book is really all about the art of the pitch. How do you actually communicate when you're trying to pitch a deal or pitch a sales, pitch in a sales opportunity? He has a very good way of breaking down the entire psychological dance of a pitch. So that's a very, I think, a very powerful book in terms of the mindset for that you want to get into for raising money. That would be book number one. Book number two, classic, maybe many of your listeners have already heard or heard of, and that's a book called The E-Myth. That's E-Myth, M-Y-T-H, Revisited by Michael Gerber. And I consider that to be a business 101 book where it really breaks down the different roles within a business. Oftentimes people talk about business in the context of their technical expertise. You know, I'm a baker, so I'm going to open a bakery. I'm a plumber, so I'm going to open a plumbing business. I'm a, fill in the blank. I'm going to, open that kind of business. Where in fact, the game of business is actually quite separate, quite divorced from the technical skill. You know, if you think about, Richard Branson, he started an airline. He knew nothing about airlines. There was ever an industry anywhere on the planet that requires a lot of deep domain expertise. It's the airline industry. He knew nothing about it. And he went from concept to planes in the air in 90 days. He approached it as a business owner. And the E-Myth really helps break down and separate the different thought processes associated with being a business owner. That'd be number two. And number three, I would say, is a book called Multifamily Millions by David Lindahl. And this is really all about the concept of value creation, in particular for multifamily investing. What is the process of doing what's called a value add in that particular business? So those would be the three books. I would say Pitch Anything by Oren Klaff, E-Myth by Michael Gerber, and Multifamily Millions by Dave Lindahl.
Victor, thank you for those great book recommendations. Those will all be in the show notes. And if you guys want a book about content marketing, you could get my book, Content Marketing Secrets, which is over at markberty.com/book, which will also be in the show notes. And before we wrap up this episode, Victor, I've asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Probably the number one thing that I see, if I look at anyone who's been successful in business, if you interview them, as I'm sure you've interviewed quite a few, every single one of them, even folks that have achieved what you might consider to be breakout success, somewhere in their history, they have a story about a partnership gone bad and about some kind of business failure. And typically, it wasn't an act of God. It wasn't they got struck by lightning or, there was a flood or anything like that. It was really traced down to they had the wrong people in the wrong chairs. And so that's probably the most important thing to focus on as you're looking at partnerships, as you're looking at putting together business ventures. Focus on, read up on how do you determine you've got the right people on the bus. That is probably the number one thing that will cause your business to fail is having the wrong people.
Victor, thank you for sharing with us that great question, all of your insights throughout our time together. And if you guys want to learn more about Victor, grab his book, Magnetic Capital. It will teach you how you can raise all the money for any worthy venture that you decide to pursue. Victor, I can't thank you enough for being a great guest on the Breakthrough Success Podcast and sharing your insights with us today. It was such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, great to be here. Thank you, Mark. And look forward to engaging with your listeners. If they want to reach out to me directly, of course, they can do so at victorjm.com. And if they order the book from Amazon, they'll get it quicker. And if they want a signed copy, they can order it directly from my website, and I'll send them a personally autographed copy.
Sounds great. Those will be in the show notes for anyone who is interested in those. Again, thank you for sharing your great insights with us.
My pleasure.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markberty.com/retweets.